It's Ask the Governor, in depth with Virginia Governor Ralph Northam. Now, live from the Glass Enclosed Nerve Center, it's Deborah Feinstein and Mark Lewis.
Governor Northam in the studio. We are ready for this month's edition of Ask the Governor. Thank you for joining us. Nice to have you along. If you have questions for the governor, you can get in on the broadcast right now by calling 877-336-1035. That's 877-336-1035. You can tweet your question, submitting it with the hashtag AskThe on Twitter. Pose a question at WTOP.com. And again, if you like us on Facebook, you can watch the show live and submit questions as well from Facebook Live. Good morning, Governor. Nice
Hello,
to have you with us.
Governor.
Good morning, and thanks for having me here. It's great to be back in the Nerve Center.
All right.
Good to have you.
Well, let's jump into talk of the budget. You must be tired of seeing numbers these days, I bet.
You know, it's almost like a broken record, isn't it? You know, we were in session, and we had a good session. I think a lot of bipartisan work, but the most important bill didn't get done, and that's the budget. And you know, now we have local governments. You know, we have teachers, people that need to know what our budget is, and so it's just, you know, it's time to stop the excuses and get back to Richmond and get us a budget that's structurally sound and a budget that expands health care for 400,000 working Virginians.
Well, after years of saying no, Virginia lawmakers appeared to have moved a step closer to expanding Medicaid. In a special session, the House of Delegates last week again passed its version of the budget, which included Medicaid expansion. The House tweaked it a bit to satisfy some lawmakers in the Senate who wanted work requirements in order to expand Medicaid. And so all of the focus now shifts to the Senate, where two Republican lawmakers have indicated they may switch their vote to support Medicaid expansion. But we learned yesterday that the Virginia Senate won't be returning to Richmond until May 14, correct? To even begin the process of considering a new budget. You need to have this approved by the end of June in order to avoid a government shutdown in Virginia July 1st. Why is this delay happening in the Senate? Nearly a month it'll be since the House passed its budget before the Senate will take it up.
Absolutely. It's very disappointing. And, you know, we had tough negotiations back during the session. You know, we gave some on our side. The House Republicans gave some. Actually, the Senate Republicans were at the table. You know, I think we had a good plan, again, that expands health coverage. The House, once again, has put their budget in. They've made a few changes. I'm going to stick to the, you know, point. I think the simpler we do this, the better, without getting into waivers, without getting into work requirements. But, you know, all options are on the table right now. But as you said, we've got a couple Senate Republicans who are willing to work with us, and the writing is on the wall. And so I would just encourage the Senate to go ahead and get back to Richmond and let's make this happen.
Well, the Senate leaders, the Republican leaders, say they want a full report on state revenues before they're going to commit to a budget. So how much time do you think we're talking about here before the Senate could potentially vote on its version of the budget?
You know, we had offered to give them an overview of the revenues that are coming into Virginia at reconvene session. After reconvene session, they left town. So, you know, it's just another excuse. They're trying to run the clock out. And, you know, we know where our revenues are in Virginia. We're in good shape. And I put an amendment in that if we have extra revenues, they were going to go into our reserve fund, our rainy day fund. And so, you know, I don't see that there's any point of further discussing that. We've got the numbers. We know what we need to do. And, it's just time to put the excuses aside and get a budget that's good for all Virginians.
When we come back after traffic and weather, what this delay could mean for the state, and is it inching us ever so close to a shutdown? We'll talk to the governor about that and get to your call. Stay with us. We are listening to Ask the Governor on WTOP, chatting with Virginia Governor Ralph Northam, and we'll be getting to your phone calls. Some lines starting to light up already at 877-336-1035 with questions for the governor. 877-336-1035 is the number. You can tweet a question using the hashtag AskThe, or you can pose a question on Facebook if you're joining us on Facebook Live. Governor, as we mentioned, the Senate taking some more time, perhaps, to consider some more revenue numbers before they'll take a look at the budget, not returning to session until May 14, we're told yesterday. At this point, what's your level of confidence that we will get a budget hammered out? Because even if the Senate were to approve something on the 14th, you have to go into conference, and work out the difference between the House and Senate versions. What's your level of confidence that we get this done to avoid a shutdown July 1st?
Well, Mark, it's a great question. We're going to have a budget. I mean, Virginia has never been in a position where we go past June the 30th, and it's just so important for a lot of reasons that, you know, local governments, as I said, teachers, people need to plan because of our budget. And what I really am concerned about and why, you know, I think time is of the essence is because of our AAA bond rating. We're very proud in Virginia and one of a few states that have that AAA bond rating. And they put us on notice last year. They're watching us, and I have encouraged these senators and delegates on both sides of the aisle that we cannot play with fire. We need to get this done. And if we were to lose that AAA bond rating, that would be millions of dollars to the Commonwealth of Virginia, and there's just no excuse in playing games.
Is this, in your view, a delaying tactic over Medicaid expansion now that it's passed in the House?
I think it's all about politics, Mark. I mean, just I hear one excuse after another, and again, I think we've talked about some of those excuses. But as I said earlier, the writing is on the wall. We've got the House Republicans that are on board with expanding coverage. We've got a couple Republican senators now. Let's go ahead and come back to Richmond and do the right thing. And as we have said all along, you know, we heard in 2017 the importance of access to health care to Virginians. And they spoke, and we need to listen and do the right thing.
Deb,
just wanted to ask about this work requirement.
Yes.
32 states and D.C. have expanded Medicaid under Obamacare. But now that Republicans have the flexibility to impose work requirements on Medicaid recipients, Republican lawmakers in several other states that had previously resisted Medicaid expansion are now taking a second look at it. How significant do you think this work requirement in this debate? How significant is it in executing the program?
Well, I think it's a buzzword that, you know, the Republicans like to talk about, but I would look at it as a work search. I mean, we certainly want to help people get back into the workforce, but let's do it with a carrot rather than a stick. And the other things, and not to get too much into the weeds, Debbie, but if you look at the individuals that would be eligible to have their care expanded between 100 and 138% poverty, most of those individuals are working. So let's not create more bureaucracy. Let's do what we can with the resources as we bring them back into Virginia and use those resources for things like higher education, K through 12, raises for law enforcement or teachers, the opioid crisis. I mean, we've got all kinds of challenges in Virginia. So let's not create more bureaucracy, and let's help people get back into the workforce, not penalize them.
We have a sense of what the federal government shutdown is like, having gone through that many times in this region. What would a state government shutdown look like? Describe for our listeners what happens if there's no budget July 1st.
Well, essentially, folks that you know require salaries from the state would not be paid and wouldn't be working. And again, Mark, I think it's kind of a what if, but that's not going to happen under my watch. And, you know, I will continue to work with people from both sides of the aisle. And I think your listeners need to remind the legislators to do their job. And the last thing that we want in Virginia, we're proud in this Commonwealth, the last thing that we want is a government shutdown. So that's not going to happen.
Is there a sense, you campaigned in all parts of the state, obviously, where access, especially to health care, was lacking in many parts? When you did that, did you find that the voters favored Medicaid expansion by and large? And if so, was there a sense that they had voiced their concerns to their state senators?
Absolutely, Debbie. And I mean, if you look at polling, and I don't like to pay a lot of attention to polling, but over 80% of Virginians, Republicans and Democrats, they favor expanding health care. And your point is well taken. As we try to help businesses grow in rural Virginia and also attract new businesses, one of the things that's important to a business is can you take care of the individual's health care needs? And over 40% of our rural hospitals are operating in the red. And, you know, so these are resources that we could use right here in Virginia, especially in rural Virginia.
Anything you can do right now to force the hand of the Senate leaders to come in earlier so that you're not under the gun to get this done by June 30th?
Well, there are some options, Mark, but you know, I'm going to work with them. And again, it's disappointing that they're waiting till May the 14th. That's over a month from when we called them into special session. But we do have options. But I'm going to continue to work with them and do everything I can, again, to get a budget that's structurally sound for Virginia.
Let's get a couple of callers in right now, Governor. You'll need your headphones to listen to Charles on the phone from Alexandria. Charles, go ahead. You're on with Governor Northam.
Hello. Good morning, sir. I've talked for some time that it would be terrific if Virginia families could be awarded more choice in education. The Assembly past years have passed provisions for voucher plans, and the previous governor vetoed it. If such a plan comes up, a proposal, would you be in support? I think it's a terrific idea. Virginia currently has only 8 charter schools functioning, and I'd like to see some additional charter schools here in Virginia.
Charles, thank you for listening, and thank you for calling in. And education is very important to me. I believe that there is power in every child in Virginia, and we want to make sure that they have access to a world-class education. The challenge with vouchers and charter schools right now is that our teachers in Virginia are getting paid on average about $8,000 less than the national average. And so if we're going to recruit and retain talented teachers to Virginia, we've got to make it a priority. And so anything like vouchers that takes money away from K through 12 education is just not a viable option right now. But I've looked at vouchers. I've looked at charter schools. We do have a couple charter schools in Virginia. I think the localities need to be in charge if we do move forward with charter schools. But for right now, until we shore up K through 12 public education in Virginia, those just aren't good options.
All right. Before we head to traffic and weather, we have a call on line 3. Let's talk to Gail in Alexandria.
Hello, Governor.
Good morning.
Good morning, Governor. I'm Gail in Alexandria, and I supported you last year, and I was happy to do so, and I'm so glad you are Governor. But I think a big part of your campaign was Seth Opoku-Yeboah, and I was wondering if you are going to put up a statue today or issue a proclamation in honor of his birthday.
Gail, thank you so much. And Seth is he's the man. He's got his own Facebook following. And
we have to tell our listeners who Seth is.
Seth is my assistant. Seth Opoku-Yeboah is from Ghana. He's a graduate.
He's standing here in the studio
William
with
and Mary. He's
and it's his birthday.
He's 24 today. And what a gentleman he would come to work on his 24th birthday. But we're going to try to do something nice for him. But I appreciate you calling in and wishing him a happy birthday.
No official proclamations you want to sign or anything for Seth today?
Well, we just try to get him a pay raise. That's all he cares about.
All right, we'll continue with more calls for the governor. Ask the Governor on WTOP. This is Ask the Governor on WTOP. Virginia Governor Ralph Northam is with us in the studio until 11 o'clock this morning, taking questions and calls at 877-336-1035, 877-336-1035. You can pose a question at WTOP.com or tweet us your question with the hashtag AskThe. You can also submit a question if you're watching along on Facebook Live. Governor, we want to talk about Metro funding, where even victory can feel like the agony of defeat, it seems, when it comes to getting dedicated funding for Metro. There was not support in the House of Delegates for your amendments to increase taxes on hotels and home sales. That means that the Metro compromise that was hammered out during the regular session of the General Assembly is still in play. It means Metro will get Virginia's share of dedicated funding, along with dedicated funding coming from Maryland and from the district, but it will come in Virginia at the expense of road projects and other transportation needs because it's raiding funds from other budgets. We're curious, is this the last word now on this issue? And if so, what will this ultimately mean for other transportation projects?
No, Mark, it's not the last word. And just to start off with, we're very proud in Virginia that we took the lead with a dedicated source of revenue for Metro. I was glad that the governor from Maryland, Governor Hogan, and then Mayor Bowser from Washington stepped in, and now we have a dedicated source of revenue. And so that's a big step in the right direction, and we've gotten a lot of positive feedback because of that. What the legislators and what the people of Northern Virginia asked for is, let's not take any more funding than we have to from the Transportation Authority in Northern Virginia, because when we do that, it takes money away from projects like Route 1 and Route 28. And mm-hmm. so that's why I put the amendments in that I did. I was very disappointed that the House Republicans denied those amendments. And now what we have is a situation where we're taking money from the Transportation Authority. It's taking money away from projects here in Northern Virginia. Now they're going to have to compete with limited resources from around the Commonwealth of Virginia. So the answer to your question, the last question you asked, is that the end of the story? It's not. And I will do everything that I can to get us back to where we need so that all of that money in Northern Virginia Transportation Authority is used locally and not going toward Metro.
So even though we have this on the books now, it could be the funding formula could be amended down the road.
It could be amended. It could be amended through our budget, and it could also be amended if we change some of these seats up here and get people that are like-minded and listen to what Northern Virginia is asking for. And I don't think Delegate Hugo is listening right now.
What kind of message then does this send to Northern Virginia residents, businesses, prospective businesses? About Virginia's dedication to transportation needs.
Well, I think the message that we're addressing Metro is a good message, but I think as legislators, we need to listen to the people, and obviously, I don't think they've been listened to by Delegate Hugo, and again, I think it's just irresponsible, and we need to put the politics, to put the ideology aside, and do what people want. And it was very straightforward. I mean, it was overwhelming, Debbie, the people that said, don't take any more money than you have to out of the Transportation Authority, and he wasn't listening. And I think that, you know, he will have to listen to the voters in November of 2019.
Delegate Hugo seemed to have a lot of influence among those who opposed new taxes. It didn't seem, at least from what we have read, that the taxes that were proposed here would be too onerous. The Washington Post editorial board said it amounted to a $5 tax on a $500 hotel room, $350 added to the taxes paid by the seller of a $700,000 home. So it doesn't necessarily affect everyone. It will affect some. Is Delegate Hugo out of step with other leaders in Northern Virginia?
Well, I think he's way out of step. And, you know, these were proposals that were passed back in 2013. And to your point, the occupancy tax, that's paid by for people that are visiting. They don't even live in this area. So I think it's a great way of, you know, helping them to support Metro. And, again, I think it was very short-sighted what he did.
Could supporters of this have played hardball in the House, perhaps not budging on other measures until they could get their way on this one?
You know, it's always politics, Mark. But I reached out to the leadership in the House. I told them, I said, I've listened to a lot of people in Northern Virginia, not only voters, but the delegates and senators. I said the right thing to do is to support these amendments. And it fell on deaf ears, unfortunately.
I know it can sound like process to a lot of folks when we're talking about this, but Northern Virginia local leaders are saying this could mean that projects that were on the front burner may now be on the back burner. So road projects that were perhaps envisioned for the next couple of years, it might be up to a decade, some are estimating, before those projects are completed. And that's significant for people on the roads.
It is very significant. And as I said earlier, there's a finite amount of resources that we have for transportation. And these, the Route 1, Route 28 projects were lined up, ready to go. And now that funding may be jeopardized.
All right, Governor, we're going to move on, talk about the Veterans Administration, because it's an important issue that the VA, as you know, is without a leader since President Trump fired David Shulkin amid an ethics scandal. Shulkin, the third VA secretary in just 4 years. Now we have the nomination of Ronnie Jackson to replace him, which seems pretty tenuous amid allegations that he oversaw a hostile work environment, possibly drank alcohol while on the job, according to some allegations, and now Senate lawmakers postponing his confirmation hearing. There have been widespread issues at the VA, as you know, dating back to 2014. USA Today reporting recently that just a couple of weeks ago, there was another IG report that found continuing problems at VA medical centers from Kentucky to Illinois. There are about 725,000 veterans in Virginia. tell us what your level of concern is about Ronnie Jackson. We're going to talk about that right after traffic and weather. We want to know about your level of concern about Ronnie Jackson heading the VA and your concerns about that right after traffic and weather. We are back with Governor Ralph Northam, Ask the Governor, here on WTOP, our April version. We were talking about the VA, which, of course, continues to be without a leader. And we wanted to ask you, because there are so many hundreds of thousands of vets in Virginia, we'd like to know how concerned you are about the nomination of Ronnie Jackson. Do you think it'll be a while before anyone is running this department?
Well, I don't know Dr. Jackson, but I am very concerned about the health of the VA system in Virginia. You know, I am a veteran of the United States Army. I served for 8 years, took care of wounded soldiers during Desert Storm, and we need to make sure that our veterans and their families have access to the best care that we can give them. What really bothers me, Debbie, is a pattern that we're seeing in Washington, the way that our current president is governing. And, you know, to be making policy over his Twitter account, the way we make policy, any good leader, I believe, is to have vision and then talk to people about those ideas, vet those ideas, talk about how we're going to message them.
Are you concerned he hasn't vetted him properly?
And that's the exact problem that he's dealing with. Not only has he not vetted Dr. Jackson, but he doesn't vet any of his policies. And I just can't imagine even working in that cabinet or administration and circling behind him every time he puts out another tweet. It's just not the way to govern. It's dangerous, and it's also embarrassing for this country.
What are some of your thoughts on calls for more privatization within the VA? As you campaigned and spoke to veterans, were they more in favor of having private options for treatment?
You know, I hear some people talk about that, but veterans mainly just want health care, and they want their own system. So I've actually had discussions with Senator Warner, Senator Kaine about this. And you know, I think what we need to do, rather than talk about privatizing the VA system, we really need to make the current system strong. And you know, back to your original question about Dr. Jackson, who, again, I don't know, but that is a very broad agency, and we need someone that really knows what they're doing to run that agency and make sure that all of our veterans have access to quality care.
We're going to take another phone call here for you, Governor. We're going to speak with Eileen, who's calling in from Fairfax. Eileen, go ahead. You're on with the Governor.
Good morning, Governor. As you know, more than 12,000 people with disabilities are on a waiting list for disability services via the Medicaid program. And now we're talking about expanding Medicaid to more than 400,000 people. I would like to know what you're going to do for these 12,000 people, some of whom have been waiting for years or decades for services, when you're adding all these new services and the budget's going to be going to that.
Eileen, I really do appreciate your question. And as a child neurologist, I can really speak in some depth to Medicaid waivers. And to your point, there are over 10,000 folks waiting for waivers, and that's unacceptable. Now, the question is, how do you pay for those waivers? Or support them financially. And so I will preface what I'm going to say is that there are consequences to limited resources. And so we have, by expanding health care, by expanding Medicaid in Virginia, the difference between the House budget and the Senate budget is $400 million. And so $400 million could be used for a lot of things. One of which is to look at the Medicaid waiver. So again, let's not leave resources on the table. Let's bring those back to Virginia and use them for folks that need these waivers. The other thing I would say, Eileen, is that the individuals that we're expanding coverage to are working. So they're not individuals that are disabled, generally speaking. So, you know, to give them access to health care is important. Also, to bring the resources that we could back to Virginia to use for such things as a Medicaid waiver is also important. So I think it, you know, can be a win-win for Virginia.
We have a follow-up Medicaid question. Line 6, Chris is calling in from Arlington. Chris, go ahead. You're on with the Governor.
Thank you. Governor, have any stress tests been performed that show what would happen to Virginia's budget if Medicaid expansion enrollment is double what's expected, as has happened in other states?
Well, you know, Chris, I appreciate the question, but I would kind of respond by saying that I believe the most recent count is there are 32 states who have expanded coverage. Not one of them has reversed. I talk to governors around the country, and they say that they're glad that they have expanded Medicaid, that those resources, you know, are being used wisely. And just to go back what I just said, there are consequences to limited resources. We have been proposing to expand Medicaid for the last 4.5 years, and because we haven't, we have not only left it on the table, but we have given to other states over $10 billion. A billion with a B dollars. And that is no way to run a business. And so, again, it's time to put the excuses aside. I've heard all of them. Let's do the right thing. Let's make sure that the working people of Virginia, 400,000 of them, have access to health care. And let's bring those millions of dollars back to Virginia so that we can use them for things like higher education, K through 12 education, raises for our law enforcement and teachers, and also to tackle the opioid challenge.
When we come back right after traffic and weather, we're going to talk about I-66 tolls. We've got your questions on Facebook Live, and that'll be next. Stay with us.
Ask the Governor continues on WTOP. Virginia Governor Ralph Northam is with us. We have time for more phone calls before we're done here at 877-336-1035. 877-336-1035. You can tweet a question with the hashtag AskThat to the Governor. You can also post a question at WTOP.com, or if you're following along on Facebook Live this month, you can post a question there as well. Governor, a Facebook Live question that has come in today. This listener wants to know, will VDOT be placing more signs along Interstate 66 inside the Beltway to help indicate what the price of the tolls are? Currently, this listener says the only time commuters know the price of tolls is when they cross 495 onto I-66 or when they enter I-66. After that, commuters have no idea how much they're paying, according to this listener, as they drive inside the Beltway along 66.
Yeah, Mark, thank you. I appreciate the question, and it's something that I wasn't aware that was an issue. But generally speaking, you know, we have been monitoring the I-66 tolls. We feel that the project is working as it should. I think the average now two-way is a little bit over $12. You know, our whole goal by doing this was to move people from point A to point B, and we think that's working. But I will talk to our Secretary of Transportation, Shannon Valentine, who is doing a great job and address that very issue, whether we need to have more signs, because people do need to be informed. I agree with the caller.
Mm-hmm. Well, it looks like you referred to some of the data about how traffic is flowing since the tolling was put in. We've seen some VDOT data that shows that the tolling and the expanded hours has boosted speeds in the morning for the morning commute, but hasn't had much effect in the afternoon. And now this data was from February. It shows no difference in travel times in the afternoon in the same block where we used to have HOV and that 4 to 6:30 window. The travel times in February of this year when compared to February of last year, virtually unchanged in that same block. So could any tweaks be made to improve afternoon travel times?
I think there are always tweaks that can be made. And again, I think we have a great team with our Secretary of Transportation, and we're monitoring the tolls, monitoring the times, and if there are things that we think we can do to improve it, we surely will. But, you know, having input from your callers like this is great to hear.
And, of course, we have construction underway outside of the Beltway. This is a multi-year process, but folks need to be prepared for delays on that stretch of the highway.
Absolutely. And, you know, we're making expansions on 395, 95. We're working on the access to the American Legion Bridge, working with the state of Maryland on that. So a lot of good things are happening. And these are happening, Mark, because of the 2013 transportation plan, which was a bipartisan plan. We now have revenue coming into Virginia that we hadn't had since 1986. So, I encourage the folks to be patient, but I think that if they look around, they can see that there are new projects going on, and that's because we have resources that we didn't have before.
Let's go back to the phones. We're going to take a call from Robert, who's calling in from Fredericksburg. Robert, you're on the air with the governor. Go ahead.
Thank you for taking my call. It's an honor to get to speak with the governor. I recall a couple of years ago during the campaign that he sided with most Virginians who felt that the sanctuary city movement allowing illegal aliens who'd been convicted to go ahead and deport them after serving their crime, but when the General Assembly passed the legislation that would ban municipalities and counties from having sanctuary status for aliens, that he seemed to change his mind and then vetoed it. And I'd like to know what he was thinking and why he did this.
Well, thank you for the question, Robert. And, you know, the piece of legislation, the Sanctuary City Bill, as they call it, is just a solution looking for a problem. We don't have sanctuary cities in Virginia. What I do support, Robert, is local law enforcement and allowing them to do their jobs. And, you know, one of the things that one of the reasons why I'm talking so much about expanding coverage is to be able to bring those resources back to Virginia to give our law enforcement agents raises, which they desperately need. Again, we can't do that if we don't have the resources. But I don't believe in political ploys, political games. And I told them before they even put the Sanctuary City Bill on the table that it is a solution looking for a problem. And if it passed, I was going to veto it. And that's what I did.
Governor, we want to ask you about if you've had any updates with respect to the effort to land the Amazon headquarters in Virginia. As many of our listeners know, part of this region made the cut, the top 20, with locations in Northern Virginia, D.C., and Montgomery County in Maryland making the cut. Interestingly, the top elected leaders in the region, both governors and the mayor of D.C., you all signed a joint letter to Amazon highlighting why this region is the best location for their second headquarters. And it concludes by saying, we all win if any of the areas in the region were to be selected. This is certainly an example of great regional cooperation. You talk in the letter about being partners in Maryland, Virginia, and D.C. So if you think your hand is strengthened by uniting in this way, why didn't Virginia, D.C., and Maryland take a regional approach in its initial proposals?
Well, I think we are anxiously awaiting, Amazon's decision, and I don't have any information on what that decision is going to be or when it's going to be. But I can tell you, I think that we did, Mark, take an initiative, and one of them was to work with the greater Washington area was with our metro funding. And I think that spoke loudly that we're committed to having businesses grow, attracting new businesses to this area. The other thing that I would say, and I think we've really stepped up to the plate in Virginia, companies like Amazon and other companies that are looking at growing or moving to Virginia are really interested in workforce development. And we have, I think we have the right recipe, training individuals for 21st century jobs, have a good line of communication between the business community and our education systems. The other thing that companies want, they want to be part of the community. They want to give back to communities. And so we've had some great discussions. And, you know, I'm a glasses half full person, but I think we in Northern Virginia have as good an opportunity to attract a company like Amazon as anybody. And so, again, we're anxious to hear of their decision.
So you still have your three separate proposals that came in, but this letter was an effort to bolster that in some way?
Absolutely. And just, you know, as you said it, you know, whether they pick Maryland, Washington, or Northern Virginia, obviously we would like them to pick Northern Virginia, but it will be a win-win situation for the greater Washington area.
Have you had any additional feedback from the company? Any questions about the Virginia proposal specifically that you could share with us?
No, we haven't. I initially met for a breakfast meeting. Gosh, that's been probably 6 or 8 weeks ago, but since then I haven't had any discussion with them. But I think we put a great proposal on the table, and we'd like to see them come to Virginia.
When we come back, we're going to talk about the issue of school safety right after traffic and weather. Our final minutes with Governor Ralph Northam here on WTOP, 877-336-1035. If you'd like to try to get your call in, submit your questions on Twitter as well using the hashtag AskThe. Governor, as you know, students in Virginia across the nation walked out of classes on Friday last week to once again call attention to the issue of gun violence. The Virginia General Assembly, as you know, failed to pass several gun measures this year, including background checks for gun purchases, banning bump stocks, creating restraining orders that would force someone who's deemed a threat to give up guns. Some of these issues have garnered bipartisan support in Congress and even in the White House. Why do you think Virginia was reluctant to consider those measures?
Well, Debbie, I was very disappointed. There's been one tragedy after another, and And as you've heard folks say, you know, it's very kind to say our thoughts and prayers are with these families, but it's time to take action. And, you know, I took action. I showed leadership. We introduced numerous pieces of legislation to support responsible gun ownership. And the first morning that I was governor of the Commonwealth, before I'd even given my State of the Commonwealth address, all of those pieces of legislation were defeated. And one of the things that I am encouraged by, I was out there with the folks, the students that marched on Friday. I was also at the Washington March, and I met with students from Parkland. I met with their families. I met with some of their doctors. And this energy from youth is not going away. And so, you know, it is time that all of us as a society stand up and say, we need to do everything that we can to support responsible gun ownership and make sure that these horrific tragedies don't continue. And so it's important. We have a great threat assessment program in our schools. Our Speaker of the House, Delegate Kirk Cox, is working on making sure our schools are safe in Virginia. We're all working on this together. This is something that is not a partisan issue, and I plan to continue to do everything that I can to promote responsible gun ownership in Virginia.
You mentioned safe schools. We know that some of the Republican leaders in the Virginia House have set up a select committee, and they're going to meet for the first time tomorrow to study the issue of school safety, but they're not focusing on guns. They're talking about additional metal detectors in schools and improving the check-in process for people who register at schools. What is your opinion of that? We know there's a wide range of issues when it comes to tackling school security, but can you have an honest discussion about school security without really dealing with guns as part of that discussion?
Well, I think guns needs to be part of that discussion. And, you know, we've already tried to do things in Virginia like eliminate bump stocks, like promoting universal background checks, eliminating or banning weapons of war. So we, you know, we'll continue to do that. And again, I've made it very clear. I'm an educator at a medical school. My wife is a K-5 science teacher. We don't need to be arming our teachers. Our teachers go to school to teach, not to enforce the law. So the answer to your question, we need to continue to have, I think, conversations about how we can make our schools, our movie theaters, our all of these different venues, concert halls, safe, and guns have to be part of that discussion.
We are back to the phones, Governor, taking Amelia's call from Richmond. Amelia, go ahead. You're on with the governor.
Hi, Governor Northam. I'm part of a student organization here at VCU, and I'm calling concerning the proposed tuition raise. President Rao is proposing at least a 6.8% raise, and my organization is wondering if you would work with the VCU students to stop the raises and put in place a tuition rate freeze.
Thank you for your question, Amelia. And, you know, college affordability is something that is very important to me as governor. It's also important as a parent. Pam and I have two children, Wes and Aubrey, that we help through the college process as well. You know, some of the schools, Amelia, have the four-year promise, which means that the tuition as a freshman is guaranteed through your 4 years. I think that's a good way to move forward. The last thing I would say, and I hate to sound like a broken record, but, you know, we need to take advantage of any resources that are available, and this is one of the reasons I am so strongly advocating for expanding health care in Virginia, and that is $108 million is what I have proposed in the budget that will go toward higher education. And so when we have such resources, Amelia, we can try to work together to make sure that we keep college affordable for all Virginians.
Susan is on the line from Luray. Go ahead, Susan. You're on with Governor Northam.
Hi, Governor. My family owns a small farm in the Shenandoah Valley, 250 acres, which I think all family farms are struggling to make it. When can we grow some industrial hemp? I have a bottle of hemp hand cream in my purse, and I've been using hemp bedding in my stalls for my horses, but the person that sells it has to buy the hemp from the Ukraine, for heaven's sakes. Hemp is such an amazing product, a cash crop. It's easy to grow. It doesn't have to have pesticides. We small farmers would really like to be able to grow this incredible product, as our forefathers did.
All right, Susan, thanks for your question.
Susan, thank you for calling in. I also grew up on a small farm. I agree that we should be able to grow hemp in Virginia, and that's a federal issue right now that we need some help from Washington. But we have taken some steps. You know, I have supported decriminalizing marijuana. looking at the regulations for that, looking at medicinal uses for marijuana. As you know, we now can use cannabidiol in Virginia, which is a derivative of cannabis for conditions. We started with intractable epilepsy, and now we have expanded that to other conditions. So we're taking small steps, but I couldn't agree with you more. We need to be open-minded. I remind people all the time, Susan, over 100 medicines that we use routinely in healthcare come from plants. So I think we need to be open-minded and look at uses for these different plants, and in this case, hemp and marijuana.
Well, Governor, the hour has flown by, and that'll have to be the final question on this month's edition of Ask the Governor. I hope next month when we get together, we'll have some budget news to talk about for the final time.
Well, I hope so too, Mark, and we're doing everything that we can. And again, I was really proud we had some great bipartisan work in Richmond this year, and I hope they get back to Richmond soon and get us a budget that's structurally sound and one that expands coverage for Virginians.
We'll also be on the cusp of the primary in Virginia, which is happening in the middle of June, so we'll be able to talk about that as well.
Thank you all so much for having
me. Thanks for coming
on
with us.
Take care.